Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week, everybody. It's the best Tuesday you've had a week, and it is time for the True Wealth Radio. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
And Matt,
yep.
We're going to come up with a whole bunch of bad puns for today's show.
If we can come up with more than five, I'd say it's a win.
Right? Well, we got to get this show greased up and ready to go.
Oh, right? There's the first one.
Going to break it out here. So, and that's okay. This is a dirty show today. Filthy show.
It's very, right? Very filthy.
And what did we say? We're going to get in trouble with the FCC because today we're going to be talking about filthy, shifty oil.
Ooh, I like it. The show.
There was
sludge.
A bet. Could I even work it into the show? And I'm like, oh, we're totally doing this.
You just got to say
filthy,
it real slow. Real
shifty
slow.
Oil. Right? And why? Matt, talk to me about, just so everybody's clear, this was really dreamt up by Matthew.
Was.
And I want our listeners to understand a little bit about why is this on your mind right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was listening to something this morning, and this guy was talking about how there are some real key pieces that Americans care about right now when it comes to, you know, we're obviously in an election cycle, and there's some key points that everyone's kind of focused on, right? And he kind of broke down some of those main pillars. One of them was immigration. One of them was inflation. And he kind of, you know, walked through this list. And the big one that I think the guy kind of focused on was inflation. And he started talking about, like, why is it here? And, you know, one of the biggest pieces, I think, that people really care about is getting inflation down. And the question is, how do we do that? And I think from everything I've been hearing, at least lately, everyone keeps kind of coming back to the same piece, and it's oil. How much does oil cost? And
I can totally derail your show, by the way. You see how I said it today? Like, we're going to make this is the Matt Oil Show.
Then you bring in the.
No. I mean, I could derail the theory that, I mean, oil plays a contributing role to inflation. But if we have time, remind me about longshoremen and inflation.
Okay.
You could just bring that up later. All of you listening, right? You can bring it up later. So anyway, go on.
Yeah, but no, the crux here is we have to have cheap oil in order to be able to keep costs down, because if the cost to transport things goes through the roof, well, everyone just has to charge more, and it just ripples through the system. And so what I wanted to kind of do was kind of break down what are the things that we really don't know about oil, because a lot of us are just like, well, they produce it somewhere, and then they turn it into gasoline or diesel, and I put it in my vehicle, and that's really all you know. You don't really know where is it actually coming from, like where's the supply, who are the buyers, and what do changes in price, like how do you get a change in price, and how does that really affect you? And one of the statistics that I found in doing all this research that really I thought was pretty impactful was a $1 change in the price of gasoline can lead to a $100 billion shift in disposable income for consumers.
Right. And in terms of when you think disposable income.
Yeah.
Right. That's a lot.
Right. Because you think about $100 billion moving in and out of the system. What does that do to your gross domestic product? So how you're measuring the whole like health of your economy. $100 billion can do a lot to your economy. And so we're talking about a dollar change in oil prices. I mean, I can remember back to not that many years ago, I was buying gasoline under $2 a gallon. And, you know, we saw it run up over $4. And so it's like you just doubled the cost. It's over $2. So that's now a $200 billion shift in GDP.
Yeah, so
that's massive.
To give you an idea what this works out to on a per capita basis, if we have 330 million people in the United States, it's over $300 per person.
Wow.
That's so the kind of impact. A dollar shift in the price of oil could be a $300 shift in per capita based on the numbers that you've
on
just
shared.
On
the discretionary
with us.
Spending per American. And that's including babies.
And yeah, and like it's including the people that are very old and the people that are very young. And so what it really means is for the folks that are kind of in the core of it, especially because let's assume that about a third are dependents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if a third of them are dependents, you can more or less close to double that number at least.
Right.
So,
for a household, this is thousands and thousands of dollars of discretionary income mm-hmm. per household that we're talking about. It's a really, really big deal.
Yeah, it means something.
Yeah. Well, oil and gas right now is making up about 8% of our entire country's GDP.
Right. Now,
that's wild to me.
And just for a moment, I want to remind folks too, that 8%, it's not all going to gasoline. I think that's where a lot of people's minds go to, like, oh, well, we have oil, and therefore we need to have more efficient vehicles. That's going to reduce it. No, oil goes into like tons of stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, all of the plastic and polymer industry,
even like the shingles on your roof.
Shingles on your roof, the tires on your car, the asphalt in your roads. It's all over the place. Mm-hmm. The plastic in a lot of your the food that you're bringing home and the packaging, right? All of these things are coming out of, they're typically oil.
Right. There's so many byproducts.
Yeah.
Of
even certain biopharma, right? Mm-hmm. There are elements that are occasionally that it provides certain ingredients that get used in creation of medicines and so forth. So it's pervasive throughout the world. And so when people say, well, we just need to eliminate oil, I kind of roll my eyes and go, like, that's not really the way we need to look at it. Getting to renewable energies and getting to where we can have, I think it's really hard to make a case that we should say not have cleaner energy options if mm-hmm. they're available, right? Even if you can make burning fossil fuels cleaner, that's a good idea. But if you can find other renewable sources, I don't see the downside to it. But I don't think we're getting rid of oil.
Yeah, you just have to be really, really careful when you start implementing policies that have broad sweeping effects, because it's such a fine balancing act, right? Like if 8% of GDP is balanced on this pillar, right, that is oil, if you start to manipulate that too much, think of how many jobs are tied to the oil industry in one way or the other.
Well, or the derivative, right? I mean, think about if everybody has 300 fewer dollars to spend, what's the mm-hmm. impact on the economy when you think about discretionary things,
right?
You know, the go to restaurants less often, or the various other entertainment functions, like all these other discretionary areas of the economy that get sort of hammered when that occurs,
right? So,
it's definitely relevant. Okay, so this is part of what's on your mind. Then you're looking at this and saying, well, it's part of the inflation equation. And it's relevant for the election, and so
and the other piece that I'm really interested in too is the shift in how oil production has started to change over the years. And real recently, it's been a pretty rapid change, if you ask me. And a lot of that comes down to these, geopolitics and the way that, and we've talked about this on the show before. We've kind of globalized, or not globalized, but nationalized in the U.S. I think a little bit more than in years past, where we've tried to bring things maybe back inside the borders.
Oh, yeah, post-COVID. I mean, I think we learned a lot of lessons. I mean, don't you figure?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you discovered things like we can't make certain critical things for our infrastructure. We were importing them, and that's not an option right now.
Right.
And you realize, well, that's a danger to our self-sufficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there was a trend, especially previous administration, but I think it's continued somewhat. I mean, it's when I say previous, it was a big push of the Trump administration was to start onshoring jobs and, using tariffs to fight it. But the Biden administration had to really deal with a lot of the real-time impacts of COVID, right? And so they were navigating it in real time. And I think there was still a continued effort to bring production back to domestic production.
Right. Well,
there's the redundancy.
There was a big shift during that time, and that's actually something I was going to talk about.
Is this the shifty oil?
Yeah, the shifty oil.
Shifty oil. Here we go.
No, but When Trump was in office, we saw him go in and he signed a lot of new leases and he opened up a lot of federal land that prior to his administration wasn't really tapped into. It wasn't explored. And he was signing these new leases. That had an effect on things. When you open up ground, you open up the ability to create more supply. So that was a big piece. But not only that, you mentioned COVID. During that time, you know, we got to remember back, he was negotiating with OPEC. And during that time, he was working to cut the global production to stabilize pricing, right? Because there was such a slowdown in the economy that he looked at that and he was like, hey, you know, if we want to stabilize
when oil went negative temporarily?
Right.
Because I remember that.
Yep. And he was instrumental in getting in there with OPEC and making sure that this thing didn't get worse than it was. And then part of that,
if only
on
I could have
end,
leased an oil tanker back then,
right?
But I just was fresh out of them.
Yeah. Well, and one other piece is the shale, and I want to get to that maybe later in the show, but the shale production is a really, really big piece about what's happening inside of our border, and kind of how that relates to our strategic reserve.
So, these are really interesting. So strategic reserve, shale oil, OPEC, you've touched on. All of these are different relevant mechanisms for pricing. And then I have a policy question that I'm going to bring up.
Let's do
but
that.
I think you're right. I think we're at a point we better grab a break here.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll see Matt. I'm going to challenge him on this question. How far-sighted should energy policy be?
Ooh, that right? might be a trickier answer than you think.
It very well may. Stick around and we'll unpack some of that when we come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
No, you have to save those for the. We're live again.
Oh,
you have
gosh.
To say, yeah, you have to share it with our
we
listeners.
We were debating oil off air.
All right.
If you missed it.
So, welcome back to the True Well Show. Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And we are today talking about filthy, shifty oil. Right? We are discussing, and Matt, it was inflation.
Yep.
And immigration were the two issues, and oil is pretty meaningful chunk of inflation.
Yep. So we wanted to kind of focus on that.
And this is something voters are paying attention to as well.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, so there are a handful of key issues out there, but this is one of them.
And we were kind of talking about, like, when we left off, we had two different administrations kind of take two different stances on oil. And we kind of touched on that, like what Trump did. And then we kind of talked about the fact that he was really pushing for the shale production inside of our borders. And then we kind of talked, did we talk about kind of Biden's stance on some of the oil? Did we get to that?
Less so, right?
I mean,
and it's tricky because it's tricky to me. I don't know a ton about the unique policies of Biden and Trump, other than Trump, in my estimation, was generally more pro-domestic production. I mean, he was the you know, drill baby drill guy.
Right.
But then we got into COVID and we had radical supply. And then the Biden administration, I think it happened on there. Well, maybe it was initially happened with Trump the first year of his or the last year of his term when we had oil go negative.
Well, Biden's theory on this was because Trump was putting a ton of oil into reserves, right? Especially when it went negative.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you, right? If oil is that cheap, why would you not kind of fill up the reserves? Biden takes office and he looks at that and says, well, we have a lot of reserves. And, you know, I've kind of been pressured to push the green energy thing. That's part of the reason why, you know, I ran on this campaign. It's to bring this clean, new green energy. And so he runs his campaign on that. He gets elected. And with a huge amount of reserves, he was able to say, let's open up some of those reserves and take oil out. And then the other thing that he was doing was he actually halted the new leases on federal land and kind of retroactively went back and said, and it was related to the methane thing, right? Like Trump allowed some drilling in areas that were close to methane where that hadn't been a thing before. So he changed the regulations, Biden took it back to how it was. So he reverted back to the way it had been. And so production obviously went down. But to try and keep up with production, you open up some of the reserves. So he manipulated it in kind of the reverse order that Trump had used.
So here's an interesting political dynamic to think about for a minute. Okay, I'm not suggesting this is what happened, but I'm suggesting if I were a strategist, I might consider that mid-presidential term, I would want to do the painful things then so that people forget about them by the time the next election comes around.
Right.
Okay. And if one of the things I need to do for my constituents is I need to promote more green energy, then what I would do is intentionally allow oil to get very expensive.
Right.
Okay. Because when oil is really expensive, then alternatives become more economically viable.
Yeah.
Right. If oil is cheap, like who needs solar when oil is cheap?
Right.
Right. But when oil is expensive, solar thrives because all of a sudden there's an alternative energy and it makes more economic sense.
Right.
Okay. And so you can see the correlation between the price of oil and the adoption of green energy that would otherwise be more expensive as an alternative because the price starts to look more comparable.
Right.
And so if
that's a good point.
If we saw the strategic oil reserves being depleted, then initially that could stabilize fuel prices or even lower them.
Right, but the oil industry looks out into the future.
Right.
And so if they know that our oil reserves are low.
Right. And it was a funky time because during COVID, we really slowed down oil consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We locked everybody down. They couldn't move. And as a result, you know, we weren't burning fuel the same way. And so since then, obviously, it has, kind of resumed, although we have been on a general course of less oil consumption. Like our oil consumption is relatively flat, as my understanding in the United States. Even though we're getting more efficient as we go.
Yeah, and that's the stuff with Trump and Biden. That's kind of it's not really behind us because we're still paying higher prices at the pump. I get it, but the thing that I think really started to shift things even further is when Russia decided to invade Ukraine. That really, really had a huge impact on our trade balance, right?
Yeah.
Because we had been exporting a ton of oil. Where? To China. Now, Canada and the U.S., we move a lot of oil back and forth, but a lot of our oil was going to China. Well, you get tariffs involved and you get all the other stuff and sanctions on Russia. That really, really, really shifted the oil dynamic globally, because Russia, you know, is looking at this and they're saying, well, if this whole thing has changed, why don't we start dealing with China more? And we saw that happen. Russian oil has been flooding into China. China hasn't been buying as much from us. And so, yes, we are an exporter of oil, but we have a lot of competition with the Russian oil market. And China has reduced their dependency. So now the U.S. is having to relook at this whole thing and say, you know, where are we going to sell our oil to?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big question mark. And, you know, there's talks about, you know, Europe being a possible buyer, some South American countries.
Part of the, European strategic alliance with the United States is if there's going to be sanctions on Russia, then Europe can't get their oil from Russia.
Right.
And so that becomes a different issue as well. So I think Europe's been getting a lot more of their oil from Saudi Arabia these days. And China's been getting it from Russia. I mean, here's the funny thing, right? The oil, in a sense, is fungible in that, like, there are different types of oil, right? There's different quality levels.
Yeah, and the cost to produce it based on what method you're using is dramatically different. Shale is a little bit more expensive to produce than some of the other methods.
And let me also clarify, there's produce as in extract, right? So shale is tougher to extract, but the type of material that you get that needs to be refined also has different grades.
Yep.
Right. And, interestingly enough, most of the U.S. oil, we don't import it from Saudi Arabia. We import some, but our major import partner is Canada.
Canada's the one. Yeah. That's, you're not wrong on that. But
it's a matter of, like, there's so much need for oil around the world. And so everybody's sort of coordinating where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the number one stabilizing factor for the price of oil is OPEC.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which I need to try to remember what OPEC stands for. It's the Organization of Petroleum countries.
There you go.
Exporting countries.
Right.
Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC.
Right.
And, you know, they more or less create quotas for how much they're going to produce. And the idea, this is the most common example of an oligopoly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a fun word to say, by the way. If you want to sound smart someday, say oligopoly. Okay, you've heard of the because nobody plays the board game oligopoly, right? They play monopoly.
Yep.
Okay. But what is an oligopoly? Okay, if mono is one,
it's more like, than one group say, having control.
Yeah, if
control
we have polygopoly,
over it.
Yeah. Then it would be a many. So oligopoly is a small, not many, but it's a small group.
Right.
So an oligopoly is a small group coordinating their efforts to behave like a monopoly.
Right.
And that's how they're trying to price fix, is that they can corner the vast majority of the market. And then you get some outliers. You know, Venezuela kind of does their own thing from time to time. You got Russia doing its own thing from time to time. You got the United States and Canada that are trying to, you know, run the world doing their own thing. So, yeah, I mean, it never quite works because greed.
Mm-hmm.
But it does stabilize things a fair amount.
Right. What's really wild to me is how different the cost can be to extract the oil based on where you're at and what you're doing. Like Saudi Arabia, we look at that country and we're like, man, you know, they're doing so well. Why is that? Their cost to extract oil and sell it, they can break even at like 10, when oil is like $10 to $20 a barrel.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the U.S., like offshore drilling especially, very, very expensive to drill offshore. We're talking like $50 to $80 a barrel.
Right.
Shale's a little bit lower, like $30 to $50.
I was always talking about if it's below $40 a barrel, shale is probably not economically
no,
viable.
It's not. Yeah. And then just your regular like get into the ground and pull it out, that can get down into like the $30 to $40 range where you can still break even. But so you look at oil today, I think it was in the mid-70s, like, or something like that.
Let's
I think
find out.
76.
I have the internet.
$75, $76 a barrel. So no matter what way you slice it right now, these companies are making money. No matter really how you're pulling the oil at this very moment, in Saudi Arabia especially, you know, if they can break even at 10 or 20 and oil's at what, 70?
73, 71.
70, ooh, it's actually down a little bit. But still, yeah, it's very interesting.
It was 78.12 last month. It was $92.
Oil's really sliding. That's the thing. It's coming down, and it's funny to me that it's coming down right before an election.
It also depends on what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
If we're using – so there's a couple different grades. The two most common that we hear about are going to be Brent crude or West Texas Intermediate,
yep.
WTI. So West Texas Intermediate, that's I'm showing – looks like summary. It's $74.73. Brent crude's at $78.27. So I'm not sure how we got to – I guess WTI, yeah, as of today, it's now down from – it was 74.73 yesterday. It looks like it's at 73.71. Wait. Yeah, as of October 8th. So there we go.
So it's really coming down. But here's what's interesting. We're talking about how does the Middle East affect investors? How does it affect, you know, the economy, the whole thing, right? Tensions are sparking. We've seen Israel – kind of going to Lebanon, it's getting ugly. Iran obviously shot a bunch of missiles off again at Israel. That whole thing is escalating, and the analysts and the experts are predicting, you know, we could see a 10 to
Wait. Whoa. You're going to tell me what analysts are going to project.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I'm going to make everybody listening.
Oh, you're going to make them wait to see what this...
Absolutely. This is a great teaser. This
is
that moment where you're like,
I'll give you that.
Wait.
I
want to know what happens to oil because we're going to give a guaranteed 100% unaccountable and you can't quote us on it price that we pull out of a hat from somebody else.
Yes.
About oil based on what happens in the Middle East. But speaking of dollars and cents, we do need to take an additional profit break.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so stick around. That's what the music means. Listen to this really important advertising stuff and ponder your place in the universe before we come back and talk about filthy, shifty oil. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, guys. Everybody's got to dial back in. You're listening to the True Wealth Show. Dave Little John in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Matt, we are talking about
filthy,
shifty oil.
There it is.
Right? And we have been going through the all the different ways that people pull this out of the ground, and it costs money to do it.
Yep.
But there's one place on the planet that seems to be strategically well positioned to pull oil out of the ground at a very affordable price. Any commentary as to where that might be?
Saudi Arabia.
Oh my goodness. Are they still the number one producer on the planet?
I don't know that, actually.
We don't actually have this. That's okay. I'm not going to hold your feet to the fire in that, but we know they play a pivotal role in OPEC. They're a pivotal role in the Middle East. And last I checked, there was not a lot of stability in the Middle East. Somewhere between Iran, Palestine, and Israel, it's as if rockets are being lobbed all over the place.
Yeah, and it can really destabilize things.
So talk to me about that. What does it mean?
Yeah, well, if stuff escalates further, right? Like, oil pricing isn't always just based on supply and demand. Sometimes it's looking deeper into the future at what do we expect to happen, because people want to get ahead of the curve, right? And so if they think that tensions might really, really flare up and something bad's about to happen.
Wait, are you suggesting that there may be speculators in the oil market?
Right?
That's,
that's crazy.
Outlandish.
Crazy.
And not surprising.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah. And so they're thinking that if this thing keeps escalating at the rate that it's going at, we should see oil jump between $10 and $15 a barrel. So,
which we've talked about, for every dollar move in oil, we expect a $100 billion counterproductive effect in the U.S. domestic economy.
Right. Now, how much will it move a dollar of gasoline between?
No, I don't think it would move that the dollar of gasoline that much.
Well, could it take our $3 gas and take it back up to $4?
Well, I don't know.
If oil goes to $85 a barrel.
So let's talk percentages, right?
Right, yeah.
If oil
that's
goes from $70 and it goes up $10, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it goes from 70 to 80.
It's
as a percentage, that's, well, it's what, about 16, 15%?
15, 16%.
So that means that if you got a $3 gallon gas right now, you're going to go to $3.50 roughly.
Yeah,
you know, a little less than that, $3.40.
So we're talking about a $50 billion shift in discretionary spending alone.
Yeah,
it's a pretty big movement.
Yeah, well, that's $150. If you do the math, right? If we're talking about $100 billion, if the gas went up by a dollar, so a 50-cent move would be half of that. Then we would say, all right, well, 50-cent move in gas, that's about $150 per man, woman, and child citizen of the United States.
Right. Just
based on the math we did earlier, which
nothing even
totally
has,
need the podcast to get caught up.
Nothing even has to technically happen. Just tensions get
just
worse.
Just spooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that
my
the
theory
question,
on why that won't happen in the next 30 days. Right.
Well,
because it's October 8th and on November 9th, we're supposed to have a new president.
Right.
So
the question
I
is,
can't imagine,
does Iran and Israel care that much?
Well, no, I don't think that's – I mean, I think that's part of the question.
Right.
I don't think they care about our election as much
as we do.
Well, I mean, they're probably okay with things kind of status quo right now.
Well, like Iran's been getting
– Yeah.
Like, look at where the money's flowing. I mean,
right,
it's
right.
Out
so
of,
they're probably pretty cool with that.
Yeah. They might actually give it some time. Like, let's not rock the boat too hard.
Maybe.
But I
we
can't
also
really say that.
Have,
Iran just launched a bunch of missiles.
Well,
like, you're not playing it that safe.
What might you see liquidate in order to keep fuel prices lower as we approach Election Day?
The reserve.
Strategic reserves.
Yeah. Come
right?
on. There's
and
a reason.
So, you know, from a purely a supply perspective, and
you're not innuendoing that there could be some vote buying with manipulating the reserve, are you?
I'm not saying there's vote buying. I'm saying that there are certain people that that's their interest and they would choose to protect it.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, if you had a student loan and somebody said, hey, if you vote for me, I'll make your student loan go away. That would be pretty compelling.
Right.
Right. Now, if you don't have a student loan and you look at that and go, well, you know where the money's coming from, me, right? Then you're going to be pretty pissy about that. It's a technical term.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, though, because, you know, what if we keep pushing super, super hard on the green energy? And what if oil, you know, really kind of takes a big hit and gets down to $50 a barrel, where we're basically breaking even?
So every time that oil does that, the issue comes down to some basic economic principles.
Again, sure.
I'm, you know, my opinion here, but this doesn't seem to change regardless. And that is $50 oil is really tough to compete with.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? You can either at a government level through policy and through regulation, you can manipulate the price. You know, you can forbid the use of oil, or you can do things like they do in California, like set really high emission standards that are unachievable with fossil fuels. And then you kind of force everybody to, I guess, move something, kind of shift elsewhere. Right.
Right.
Because like, oh, well, we don't burn the fuel in the car anymore. We fill them full of electricity. We just burn the fuel at a plant somewhere generating the electricity to put it in the car, right?
So that's tough because we're short on electricity as it is, right?
Well, that presents a whole nother issue, right? The grid and the ability to move the power around and the ability to store it and all that.
Yeah, and you look at the economies of Texas, North Dakota, what are they? It's shale, right? Like, it's shale oil, and $50 a barrel is kind of that magic line in the sand. There's your second pun of the day. you're welcome. But yeah, so if we push the green energy thing too hard, it could kind of spin the other direction, and we could see a lot of job loss and instability in those states.
So my sense is that unless you forbid the use of oil, if it gets cheap enough, then it simply becomes
an export game.
Well, it's not even an export game. At that point, domestically, people will just say, oh, well, that makes it easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
People buy SUVs when fuel was cheap, right?
Yeah.
And they buy trucks, right? And Americans love big vehicles. And so, oh, well, fuel is $2 a gallon now? I'm getting myself an Escalade.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of thing that happens.
Swings GDP in just a different direction.
It just kind of moves it around. And so
yeah.
I think that you just see different opportunity sets manifest, right?
That's a good point. I like that.
Yeah. And so if fuel is really expensive, though, green energy becomes viable for other reasons, right? Again, it has to do with substitution, right? By the way, this is a fun basic premise that everybody should revisit. Like, if you're listening to the program right now, here's your like basic economics 101.
Right.
Supply and demand comes with, right? The substitution is an economic concept.
Well, it's a good concept to talk about because when you look at like where the analysts and the experts are saying, where is the substitution piece? If oil isn't our big export, it could turn into a natural gas, the LNG. And that could be a real viable thing moving forward in the future.
Yeah, so especially the United States has tons of natural gas.
Yeah.
Right? The issue at play with some of these, especially when it comes to what we think of traditionally as like a fuel source for vehicles is the most common. The problem is the infrastructure converting vehicles to accommodate natural gas and the infrastructure and distribution, right? Oil is really well established.
Yeah.
And so much so, and it's quite portable and it's reasonably efficient for what it is. And so there was a reason that we developed that. Electricity is really fantastic at delivering torque and whatnot. And so there's a lot of engineering elements to why electric cars are really cool, but it takes a long time to charge them right now relative to the speed at which you could gas up a vehicle. And you have to get the power somewhere. And if you have excess power, what do you do with it? Right? Like, how do you store it? And how do you train? You know, so it's a different mechanism. It's not,
storing is a lot more expensive.
And transport as easily.
True.
And as stably as fuel. And that's actually true, by the way. If you think, oh, well, gasoline is highly volatile, it'll, you know, explode and light on fire. It's like, go look at lithium ion batteries.
Right.
They're pretty unstable. If you don't want to cross circuit one of those puppies, that will let you know.
How many times have we seen one of these electric vehicles just raging fire?
Well, and you can't necessarily put it out until the battery burns up the material so that it can't burn anymore. Because once you bridge a circuit, and it's like, it's going to get hot and it's going to burn. And you can.
Yeah,
you know, it's the heat's generated chemically, not because of oxygen. So you can't just throw foam on it and make it stop.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's just more complicated to stop electrical fires. So anyway, sorry, we got slightly off the beaten path there. But the point is, cheap oil probably means people substitute with oil, right? I mean, if steak's really expensive, then people substitute with chicken, and then they go from chicken to peanut butter, right? And then you go from peanut butter to, I don't know, ground beetles or something. That's the joke of the day, right? Everybody's like, hey, when are we going to start farming crickets? And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. It just sounds icky. But, I'm also pretty industrialized. So.
Sounds almost as bad as like one of those vegan burgers.
Doesn't do it for me. Ugh. But
Do you know that laxatives hold those together? Like you want your like...
I don't... we're true. Talking about the oil it's just true. Got even dirtier.
It oh, did. Man. It got like, a lot
how did
dirtier.
We go there, Matt? You're now... I blame myself. I was talking about substitution, and I gave examples. Yeah. I started this, didn't I?
You're welcome.
Doggone it. See, this is why we can't have nice things, Matt.
Yep.
We'll just take it too far.
Bring up those laxatives on air.
golly. Well, just
slippery.
Like, I would say it's another oil pun. Sometimes you just gotta, grease the skids.
Yep. Go get that Beyond Burger.
There you go.
Turn that into an advertisement.
So, what do we think is important for our listeners as we're staring at?
Well, here could be a takeaway.
What does oil mean?
How about we talk about diversification, having a balanced set of investments? Some people, I've seen it, they just want to lean completely into one area, and it's things are changing as things are evolving. Green energy is probably not going away.
I have a thought about this.
Okay.
I think you'll actually appreciate this too, because I think we could really have some fun with this concept that you're sharing. Okay. The idea is what are derivatives of oil?
Okay. Ooh, okay.
What are derivatives of oil, and what does this mean to us as investors?
I like where this is going.
So I want you to grab this thought and hang on to it. Remember, a derivative is a derivation from, right? So it's a second order effect from oil. Okay.
Mm.
So let's explore that a little bit, but we got to take our last important break first. So stick around, guys. If you want to know, what does oil have to do with me? The hint is it may be not a direct effect. It may be a second-order derivative. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Okay. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We're coming back from the break. No. Okay. Welcome back to the True Wells Show.
When she fries you up a ribeye, it's just like, this is love.
Guys. I can't even tell you the jokes, but they were inappropriate and hilarious. Just know that. Welcome back. Homestretch, the True Wells Show. Dave Littlejohn with
Matt Dixon,
who is a bad influence.
I am.
We're talking about oil today, right?
Oh, I thought we were.
Filthy, shifty oil, right?
Yes.
And second order derivatives, okay? This is actually something pretty important for investors to understand.
Are you talking about things that are like inversely related to oil?
So not necessarily inversely related, although it could be, right? When you think about how you design investments, one of the things is, hey, let me explain. So you could have a correlation where it's like, something happens and it affects something else and they're connected to each other.
Right.
You could have an inverse correlation where something happens to one thing that's bad and it's good for another thing. Right. So example, like green energy and oil tend to be highly correlated. When the price of oil is up, it's good for green energy because it's more money for the alternative. Right. Like green energy stocks tend to go up with higher oil prices, because when oil drops, people substitute oil.
So it's okay? The anticipation of it coming back down.
So it's not necessarily, I mean, it's an actual thing. Like, look, if I have to spend $100 for oil,
mm-hmm.
or I can go buy solar panels, it's cheaper to buy the solar panels now right. because oil's so expensive, right? But if oil falls to $30 a barrel, then I'm like, well, you know what? I'll just get the oil and skip the solar
panels.
Yeah,
I mean, that makes sense. You look at kind of some past performance, and I can think back to like when oil was going crazy and what did we see? Solar was also really moving.
Now, here's an inverse correlation, right?
Okay.
You get trucks and SUVs sell when oil is low.
Right.
And they don't sell when oil is high. Right? So price of oil goes up, truck sales go down.
Right.
Okay. Inverse correlation.
Hmm.
Now, a second order or a derivative would be something like the cost of oil goes up, and the price of corn goes up because the price of farming corn goes up because you need more fuel to farm.
Right.
Right. And so a second order derivative is if fuel prices are higher, the price of producing goods and services and moving them around, like, oh, oil is higher, trucking stocks may be adversely affected. So if you have a shipping company, right, UPS may, there's not a recommendation, by the way, but go look, high fuel prices, lower profit margins, right? And so sometimes you'll even see these companies respond with fuel surcharges, right? They'll actually change the price in response to fuel. So that's an example of a second order derivative, right? It's a derivation, but it's not a direct connection. It's a secondary connection, but it ripples through the economy. And I think that's kind of your point from earlier,
right?
We just didn't name it that. We said, oh, well, if gas goes up, then people have less discretionary income.
Mm-hmm.
And the secondary effect is they buy less discretionary stuff.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, maybe you see people taking fewer cruises.
Yeah.
Right. And say, so, oh, okay. Well, the second order effect of high fuel prices is that people don't take as many vacations or they don't go as far.
True.
Okay. So this is an example. And I think it's super relevant to think about because there are certain things, like, here's a silly example, right? If you ever have a back injury, man, your back's involved in everything, right? You can't turn your head. You can't tap your toe. It's like everything's affected somehow.
Yeah.
Right? It's like everything in your life. It's hard to not have that. Oil's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
It is really woven into the economy in a lot of ways. It's a very deep integration in many, many facets.
Yes. And that's so, that's a good point. And that's kind of what I wanted to focus on today. It's like we need to realize how big of an impact oil is because, you know, we are coming into an election cycle and there's a lot of things to consider when we go to vote. And I think oil is a big piece.
Right. Right. And I will continue to say this was my question. Remember, I asked this earlier, Matt.
Yeah.
And it's a trick question because I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. But I think our listeners should think about this, too, is how do we encourage, at long term, encourage the development of clean and renewable fuels?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's largely a good policy, right?
Yeah.
If we just kind of believe in that. If you actually don't believe in that, then it's like, I'm not even going to answer that question.
Well, I think there's a reasonable response to that. And I think it's you have to approach things with a little bit of moderation because, like, you look at California, we are going to be completely emission-free by the year 2035. And it's like, you can't actually impose those type of policies without wrecking the entire system. Now, you can give incentives for people to do a certain behavior, but when you do sweeping mandates, you are risking breaking the system. It's a very fragile, it's a very intricate system. You can't just go out there and say, all right, here's this big, tall order. Let's just do this. And it's like, no, that doesn't work.
Well, and here's the funny thing. I'll give you a real example. Hey, Matt, what do you say that we extend our work day to 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, and we're going to work Saturdays as well, but you only have to come in on Sundays for 4 hours?
You'd be like, no.
And you're like, that's crazy. And I go, Well, what if we just stayed an extra 5 minutes just because we needed to wrap a couple things up this week? Could we do that?
Like, sure.
Well, that seems pretty reasonable now, right? Because once you set the bar like insane, everything else seems reasonable by comparison. Yeah. And so I think sometimes that's California. They're like, well, we're going to set something unachievable, but it's, you know, we're making a statement. And then when we don't do it, it's like, by the way, you're making a statement. You can't do it too.
Right.
But, I don't like that,
no.
by the way. I do like the idea of saying we do need to have a long-term vision of improvement, but short-term we need to not shoot ourselves in the face, you know, or the foot or anywhere else. Like, tell you what, let's not wound ourselves, but let's still pick a direction and move that way and get better.
The thing that I get concerned about is, like, what's the economic impact of making a statement like that and then making companies, like, gear up as if it has to be reality? Because that's a big spin. Like, if you look at that and you have any question that it might become a reality and you're a big business, what are you going to do? You're going to spend a lot of money to make sure you don't get hosed.
Right.
And so, and we saw it too, like Ford and GM, like retooling factories for these EVs only to find out that they're not really selling. And then they're like, well, the heck with those regulations. Like, we can't bankrupt our business over it. We tried. We burnt billions and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it does. I'll use this as a final point and a pivot for our listeners. I think it's important to always have contingencies in your strategy.
Balance. Right?
And that is something we try to do with our investors as well. And as you can hear, that is the music and it's time. So, Matt, how do they reach us if they'd like to have a discussion?
Yep. Little John Financial, 541-375-0898. Call us, text us, even on our website. You can do it. Reach out.
All right. So, yep. As always, we're happy to speak. No obligations. But if you do not have somebody that you like and trust, give us a call.
Make a pun.
Find somebody. But we're out of time for now. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth.